Before New York City was the place where dreamers come to make it big, before hip-hop, before the skyline, there were the Black New Yorkers who built it.
Black people have been in this city since the 1600s, shaping its culture, fueling its politics, and telling its story.
But culture never stands still. It shifts, migrates, and transforms. I'm Haya Panjwani.
And I'm Jalen Green. This City Was Black is a six-part audio series exploring what it means to live in New York.
And how the city has evolved through the view of what it means to be Black in New York City right now.
We're at a critical point in New York history. And as you'll learn throughout this podcast, the city would not be the rich melting pot of cultures it is right now without the contributions of Black people.
There isn't a single issue in the city right now that doesn't impact Black people, whether that's immigration, housing, or education. The future of New York City may be concentrated on how Black communities and other minorities thrive in the city.
Today, we're starting at the very beginning, how Black people got to New York City and where they're going now.
In the 1620s, Manhattan wasn't a city yet. It was the Dutch colony of New Amsterdam. That's when the first group of enslaved Africans and Spanish arrived, brought by the Dutch West India Company to help build it. Many Africans came from West and Central Africa. At the same time, many Spanish people that were already at sea had been captured on their own ships, forced into labor to clear forests, build roads, and lay the foundations of a new home that would one day be the financial capital of the world.
Andrea Mosterman is a historian at the University of New Orleans who studies early African life in New York. She says enslaved Africans' labor was everywhere, from a protective fortress and home in downtown to the protective wall that once stood along what we now call Wall Street.
Really, for the purpose of helping develop the colony, working in agriculture, helping build the infrastructure of the city and the colony at large.
That wall wasn't just a boundary, it was also the site of New York's first official slave market. And though most slaves never gained freedom, some were free in years to come. Over the next few centuries, enslaved people gained partial freedoms, appearing in court records and gaining land grants, and even participating in the Dutch Reformed Church.
By the early 1800s, New York's Black population had grown. Many lived in Lower Manhattan on Mott Street, Five Points, and surrounding streets around the Lower East Side. After the Erie Canal opened in 1825, New York became a thriving port city, attracting foreign trade and bringing immigrant groups. They arrived from Italy and Ireland and moved to Mott Street for its cheap living and proximity to ports and city life. Overcrowding and racial violence pushed Black residents uptown.
But out of displacement came resilience. Black New Yorkers built mutual aid societies, churches, forming communities in a divided city. One of those neighborhoods was known as Little Africa in Greenwich Village. Here, they built schools, owned property, and found safety amid hostility. But as the city expanded north, so did its ambition. That brings us to one of New York's most famous landmarks, Central Park.
Long before Central Park was a weekend escape for joggers and tourists, it was home to Seneca Village. Before it was one of the first thriving Black land-owning communities in New York City, Seneca Village was not completely a place where people lived. Located on the west side of Central Park between 82nd and 89th, mainly churches and richer people lived there in what we could think of as the countryside because it was cleaner than the overpopulated, disease-ridden downtown. But because the area was empty, landowners began selling off what they considered uninhabitable land, the land that would eventually become Central Park. And Black New Yorkers bought it.
And that was significant because it represented an area that was free from the racialized violence of downtown. And the racism, the discrimination that limited opportunities for Blacks in New York City at the beginning, in the middle of the 19th century.
By 1850, over half of Seneca Village's Black residents owned property, which was five times the city average. Black people from the South who escaped and left joined for better opportunities. Land ownership meant something powerful, the ability to pass something down, a claim to belonging. But in 1857, the city cleared the land to make way for Central Park, what elites called a vision of urban improvement. Homes were destroyed, communities erased, For descendants like Andrew Williams IV, what remains is legacy.
It shows our endurance to survive and overcome during situation, as was explained during the service. You know, this is a time during slavery that it was still ongoing, yet these individuals stepped out to form their own community at a time that was probably extremely dangerous. So beyond all odds, they stood up to become a community of free people.
And when Seneca Village fell, its family scattered, some to parts of Brooklyn and the Bronx, some to New Jersey, others out of the city altogether. But their story set the stage for generations of Black migration that would shape the neighborhoods for centuries.
In the 20th century, Harlem became a cultural capital. Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn grew into a center for Black Caribbean life, and the Bronx became home to many Afro-Latinos. Moncho Lopez is a curator with the Museum of the City of New York and born in Puerto Rico.
The fact is that we all feel, and I consider myself a Black Puerto Rican, the feeling that New York City is by far a better place and affords by far better opportunities than other places, but that at the same time, the city is a difficult place.
But Black migration didn't end there. In recent decades, many have moved again, some to more affordable suburbs, others back to the South.
I think that the elephant in the room, in a way here, that could make things, it won't change the general trend, but it could accelerate it, and it probably will, is the political dynamic coming from Washington. But we're talking about Black people in general, and so that means people from the Caribbean, people from Africa. So a lot of those Black communities are also in the bucket that you can call migrants, you know, international migrants. So based on the discourse, based on the policies, based on the ICE rates that we're seeing, I feel that the whole country, not just New York, feels a lot less safe and welcoming.
It's a full circle story. The same forces that once drew people north for freedom are now pushing them out for affordability. So where are Black New Yorkers going now? Some are leaving, and others are fighting to stay. Their migration, their fight, continues to redefine what it means to belong here, in a city built by their ancestors.
Next time, we'll follow one of those stories, the life of Carmen Daniels, who spent more than four decades in New York, watching rents rise and neighborhoods disappear.
This is The City Was Black, with your hosts Jalen Green and me, Haya Pinjwani. This series is produced with guidance from AP editors Ron Bample and Aaron Morrison. Archival material from the Associated Press and the Central Park Conservancy. Special thanks to our guests, Andrea Mosterman and Jessica McLean from the Central Park Conservancy, and Moncho Lopez from the Museum of the City of New York.
For more stories about race and ethnicity, visit apnews.com.